recording my walks on Strava.
I feel like if you haven't already been doing it, it's too far gone.
Well, I know.
You've been a full-time walker for a while now, so I think you've missed more of the content than it's going to be worthwhile.
Well, I know, and I do keep thinking that. I'm like, when is it too late, or is it not too late? Because I'm doing some really great walking, and I feel like I want to be celebrated for my walking. I want people to know these great walks I'm doing. Like,
do it then.
Today I started at 5:01, and like, if I ever did a run on Strava at within the first quarter of five, is that what you say?
Between like, 5 and 5:15.
Yeah.
Not 5:16.
You'd always get a few extra kudos.
Oh, and is that how it works?
I'm not about celebrating the early birds, because I do think that good things happen in the morning and the evening, but I do want to celebrate my walking because I'm really enjoying it and I'm really excited by it, and I want to tell people about my walks I go on, but no one seems to be that impressed.
I don't know if this is the content that people have been missing. You haven't been on the show for a while now, and here you are with the hard-hitting, juicy gossip about your walks. I don't know if that's what the people are here for, but if you want to celebrate it and if you want some kudos, get it up there. I'll give you a kudos. You know what? I was talking to Kieran from Grafton, shout out to you, and he was saying there should be a super kudos, because sometimes things are just really great and some things are just great, you know?
Well, see, I'm quite stingy with my kudos.
Oh, really? Anyone listening, if you've had a kudos from Lydia, you've done something right. It must have been between 5 and 5:15 a.m.
No, I don't discriminate against the night larks, as they call them, those who train after 5:15.
Owls? We're going to get nowhere today. This has been a long time coming, and we've already lost it.
Look, I don't discriminate, but no, I don't give out my kudos all that freely, because again, it should just be for the ones that you're like, yes, this is great. I'm here to support it.
Now, that's why you need the super kudos for those moments. And then you can be generally supportive and encouraging all the time.
But I feel like that's what the comment's for. I feel like if you think it's good, you give them the kudos. And if you think it's really good, you give them the comment. And if you think it's fine, you just don't kudo it, because you're already following the person. So you already show them that you appreciate their activities.
Once again, does any of this matter?
Look, guys, let us know. What activities are okay? What about my elliptical?
No, that's not okay.
That's wrong. Are you serious? It's cross-training.
Yep. Get it off. Unless there's a map associated with it, shouldn't be on Strava.
Can I just say, flashback to when I used to post my 6-minute rowing effort every morning. Do you remember?
Yeah.
I used to post my
Why
row?
Did you do that?
Because I liked the accountability, and I also
accountable to what? For your, knowing that your Strava fans are going to see it.
I liked remembering when I went to the gym, because I always did it at the start of my gym session. And I know I went to the gym every day, not every day, not on a Sunday, but I just enjoyed, like, when I look back at my diary, I'd be like, oh, yeah, that was a gym day. That wasn't a gym day. So it was just, like, very easy for me to tell if I had a quiet week at the gym or a busier week / missed a session. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I guess so.
I think it's a very
simple. Just clogs up the feed, to be honest.
Oh, well, unfollow me then.
Maybe I will. Anyway, we are here today to talk about how to run your first ultra marathon.
Your first ultra marathon. How good.
Should we define? Question for you.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you think a ultra walk is the same distance as an ultra run? So you know how like a marathon swim is 10Ks. Do you think a walk, an ultra walk or a marathon walk, is less than a run distance?
It's a good question.
Ponder that.
It kind of has to be, right? Because
yeah, I guess
you're kind of thinking about time. But the thing is, when you walk, the intensity is so much lower. So I feel like if it was less distance, even though it's like the same time, the intensity is just so much easier. So I don't think it could be, because I don't want to brag or anything, but I did a 3-hour walk the other day.
Whoa.
So is that the equivalent of me doing a 3-hour marathon? I don't think so. 3 hours walking, how far would I have covered? Like 18, 19, 20 Ks, let's say.
Ooh, nice. Half miles.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I just made that up. Maybe 17, 18. I don't know.
Anyway, how fast you go?
I'm thinking like half the distance. I don't go very fast. I go pretty slow. I can't because of my hip. I have to go slowly. I'm a leisure walker. So let's say I did 18 Ks. Like, let's just say 21.1 because we're trying to think about running distances.
Sure.
Is that the equivalent to a half marathon? Or because I was walking, it counts as a full marathon? You can't say that walking 3 hours. imagine if you come home to Zach on the weekend, for context, Zach is Sophie's partner, and you're like, I've just done Sydney Marathon. Like, I just trudged through the 35-degree day heat. And, like, I finished my marathon. And he's like, oh, yeah, I walked for a few hours today as well. You'd be like,
No. I'm thinking it goes the other way.
Oh.
I feel like in my head, like a 6 hour walk is like a 3:30 to 4 hour marathon.
Oh. Okay. Mm. I was
now you am I are you putting down what I'm putting up? So it's like the reverse of the swim because the swim is
Oh my
worse.
Gosh. Yes.
Yeah.
I've got it.
Yeah.
So therefore,
what distance would you call a marathon walk?
6 hours.
Okay, that's a time, but anyway, we'll go with that.
Well, it would be
objective to your
the
speed.
Same distance. It'd be roughly the same distance.
Mm, but you're walking. Nice. Okay, cool. So it's the same. You know what? These podcasts have been so productive and to the point. And now you're back, I've lost it. Anyway, I'm glad we figured that out. Today we're talking about how to train for your ultra marathon first time. What would we do differently if we could go back in time? What would we do the same? Any recommendations? We're going to talk about some mental strategies. We're going to talk about nutrition. We're going to talk about specifics around training, maybe some injury mitigation. We're going to talk about gear, what you should use, what you should buy, what you shouldn't use, some logistical things, and then what would we not do again?
Amazing. Very good. Thanks for pulling it together, Sophie Lane.
I'm back.
Goodness. Well, I think we should start at the most important part. I feel like if you're a regular / long time listener, you'll know exactly what I'm going to say. First question to ask yourself is your first ultra marathon.
Wait, stop. I just want everyone to think for a second for themselves. And if there was one question you were going to ask yourself before doing an ultra marathon and we were suggesting the question, what would the question be? Just take
what
a moment.
What would it be? Take a moment.
Reflect.
What do you think?
All right.
Okay, the question is, drum roll, why?
Why? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing your first ultra marathon? Now, there's going to be times throughout this ultra marathon where you might be saying to yourself, why am I doing this? And if you haven't pre-planned out a reason, you might pull out because you might be like, well, what's the point? But if you understand why you're there, why you've spent weeks and months training for this moment, then you're probably more likely to stick with it and get it done.
I would say beyond just more likely, I would say it's like you just absolutely cannot have that really clear set purpose. Like you have to be so, like, unless you're doing something that's not challenging, I think if you are doing something that's going to be hard, and probably if it's your first ultra marathon, it's going to be hard. And that's just, and we're going to talk about that in a bit. But if you don't have a why, then like as soon as it gets hard, it's going to be so hard to maintain the effort to get through the hard stuff. So you just absolutely have to have it. And I take this very seriously. As you know, Sophie Lane, I think before two of your ultras that you've done, I was so, I don't know how to describe, strong in my responses to you. Do you remember before you did your 30 on, 30 off run?
Oh, yeah.
Like, why would you do that? That sounds terrible. And then before you did Bondi to Manly, I pretty much said the exact same thing. Like, why? That's, like, of all beautiful runs to do, why would you pick that one?
It's a great
question. So I really hold you accountable.
You
so
do. It does make me a bit nervous because I feel like I really need to answer well because you're a tough critic when it comes to those reflection questions. But, yes, super important. And I think when you're deep into the pain cave, when you're struggling, when you're at the bottom of the mountain and you've got to climb all the way up, really having that sense of purpose and reason for being out there is really, really important to get you to carry on.
Yeah, while we're here, little anecdote for you.
Oh, I love this. Tell me.
So This was before I did my first ultra marathon, which was with Sophie Lane, 50K. We signed up for UTA Australia. I think we signed up in 2018.
It's like saying ATM machine.
UTA.
Australia.
Yeah, you're right. Sorry. I know. But just for context. So we signed up for UTA, Ultra Trail Australia. And I think we signed up in 2018 or 2019, not entirely sure. Initially, we signed up for the 25 or the 22, whatever the distance is.
Mm-hmm.
And then I secretly didn't tell you and switched my entry to the 50K. Do you remember that? And then we turned up on one run together and I was like, oh, no, I'm doing the 50K. And you were like, oh, well, now I have to do the 50K.
Why was it a secret?
Because
that feels devious to me.
I know, because I was nervous. I was nervous you could ask me why, and I was unprepared. And I also was nervous that I couldn't do it. And I also didn't want you to feel like you had to do the same as me, because we'd enter the 22 together. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and then you just ditched me.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what are you expecting to do? As if I'm going to do the 20 when you're doing that.
Look, mate. I was quite immature in 2018, obviously. Yeah, I've really evolved since then.
I'm glad, amazed we stayed friends through that. All those lies and secrets.
I probably told you like 3 hours after. I probably changed the entry and then we went for a run like a couple hours later.
Yeah.
Anyway, doesn't matter. But I remember when we were training, we did heaps of running together out on the Central Coast, and then I moved to Coffs Harbour. The event got delayed because of COVID, blah, blah, blah. They probably got all the time frames wrong. But I remember this one weekend. Now, I'm not a drinker. I probably drink once a year, twice a year, occasionally 3 times a year if I'm feeling really wild. So I just moved to Coffs, and like we'd had drinks with like all the people that had moved to Coffs with my uni group. So like my other physio friends. And it wasn't anything too rowdy, but it was rowdy enough for me to not feel so great on my Sunday morning. But I had 2 hours of running to do. And oh my goodness, they will still be the hardest 2 hours of running I've ever done in my life. Like every single step, I thought I was going to vomit. And
what about,
I got...
What about post Mardi Gras? Do you remember that in Kingdom of Mountain?
I do
that
remember that.
That was warm and very uncomfortable.
Oh, no, but you didn't see me this day.
No, I didn't.
This was bad. I feel like I'm going to paint a bad picture of myself, because as I said, not usually a drinker, but again, nothing wrong with drinking, nothing wrong with having a big night, all for it every now and then, as long as you're safe and doing good things. This is not my
for everything.
Place to give advice on people's recreational activities, but I woke up, okay, so I went to bed at 4, got up at 5, ready for my run, but I didn't realize I was still...
Why did you not have a bit more sleep?
Well, because I was excited for my 2 hour run, but my enthusiasm was just because I was a bit drunk. So I started to get ready for the run with my hat, put my joggers on, and then could not leave my room because I was so ill. So I lay on the floor with my hand like half reached.
Yep, yep.
And I tried between 6 a.m. or like from 5 to 6, I was getting ready. It took me the full hour to put my visor on. And then from 6 till 3 p.m., it took me to open the door. And the whole time I was thinking about my purpose. I was like, come on, Lydia, you are committed to the 50K. Like you have a purpose. You want to be an ultra runner. You want to run through the Blue Mountains. And so on my run, I listened to this podcast about mental fortitude and grit and about setting your intentions. And the whole run, I was like telling myself, like, yes, like, remember your purpose, like, be clear in your intention. Like, this is when it's hard and this is when you get stronger. And every step was like, oh my God, I'm going to vomit. So it was really hard. And it was a hot day as well. And it did not get better. I finished and I still felt terrible. But that was the hardest run I've ever done. And guys, that's it. Once you've done that run, that's hard. Like, just gonna have one bad run, it makes all your other runs feel good.
I'm glad we got a lesson out of that eventually. that's great. I do remember now.
Good.
I'm not sure where to go from here, but let's chat nutrition. Speaking of hydration,
good.
Kind of. So what I want to kick things off with the nutrition chat is less so about what you should be having, how many grams of carbs, how many calories, how much sodium, but more about the practicality of what you should be doing to make sure that on the day you are best prepared and the run is as comfortable and you get as many performance benefits out of the nutrition that you're taking on board as possible. So number one, we always say it, obviously try things before the day, but more than that, try things regularly every week on your long run, trying different things. Okay. Now that doesn't mean on your long run, you'll have a Cliff Bar and some Tailwind and some Goo Chews and some Cliff Blocks. And then if you feel terrible, you're not going to know which one's which. So I would break them down one by one, try one brand, one specific thing on your Sunday long run. If that goes well, fantastic. Keep that in your toolkit, keep that in your Salomon pack. And then next week, if you want to add something else in, try that, see how that goes, and do a bit of trial and error, and make sure you are either mentally or physically recording what you're having, how much, how you felt, all those things. And then by the time the race comes around, you'll know exactly what works for you.
And this is something that I think probably recreational runners just don't do that well, is like really properly try stuff. And I think our episode with Aiden, the dietitian, touched on this as well. He was saying there's a huge gap with recreational runners to elite runners when it comes to nutrition. Like, we decide, okay, I need to take some carbs on. I'm going to take one gel, and that might be 20 grams of carbs, but the elites are having 100, 130 grams of carbs. So like, why are we striving to be running further or faster, all these good things, but yet with our nutrition, we seem to go, okay, yep, like tick the box and then move on. So really the goal of your carbohydrates is to have as many as you can. Like, you only have too many when your body can't digest it. But from a performance perspective, if you can just train yourself to digest it, you're just going to continue to enhance your performance. So that's why trialing it is just so great and so obvious and just so silly to not be doing it. And that's something that would be, I guess, a possible regret, is that I just have never been overly curious. And I would say, I think I've mentioned this so many times in the podcast, but I've always had this like fear of having an upset tummy, because in my head, I just always, that's like the biggest barrier. I remember as a kid, like, if you eat your lunch too late at school and then you'd run in the afternoon, you feel sick and gross. And like, I can't think of anything worse than that. But I would say that having that as a barrier is just so silly, because there's so many different ways to consume carbohydrates. So you can have half a gel, you can have a tiny little quarter of a gel, or you can have a liquid carbohydrate, you can have Tailwind. There's so many different ways that you can do it. So it's not about, oh no, nutritional run doesn't work for me. It just means you haven't practiced it, or you haven't broadened your scope of what you're going to consume.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's something I'm really bad at, is actually taking it, like actually consuming it. I'll pack it and I'll have 2 liters of Tailwind and I'll have a bunch of chews and whatever. I'll like have plenty for the run. And then I finish the run and go, oh, I only had a few sips and I didn't actually eat anything, and it was a 4-hour run or something. So I think actually getting into the habit and just almost forcing yourself to have it at regular intervals. Increments. I know that on your watch on Garmin, you can set up a little reminder to say eat or drink or whatever at a certain time frame. So I think that's something that I have not done well at and need to continue to work on, is actually taking it on before the point of getting thirsty, or before the point of getting hungry or tired or feeling like you're running out of fuel. It's just getting into the habit of doing it from the start and carrying that through regularly on the run.
Why do you think you would just not have it? Like, did you just genuinely forget?
Yeah, I just don't really think about it. Well, like, I think about it, but I'm just not that fussed, because I just have never, how would I describe? I just don't, in the moment, I don't feel like I need it. But I'm sure, and I know from the research, that if I was to take on more, there's no way that that wouldn't improve my performance. So it's just something I haven't really, I guess I've never felt how good it could feel to have it all. So in my head, I just don't really prioritize it in the moment, and I'll plan for it and then just sort of forget, get chatting, get distracted, and then all of a sudden it's nearly done and I go, oh, I'm not going to bother now. So it's just a poor habit of mine and I need to work on it.
You know what, like, this is something that I've wondered if other people are like this too, but for me, I used to, and this is not very good, but I used to almost think it was really a sign of fitness if you didn't need it. Like, in my head, I was like, if you don't need it, then why would you have it? Like, surely, like, you don't, like, I have enough energy, like, I'm not tired, so why am I going to take on a gel? And I genuinely still have so many memories of runs like that, and people be having their gels and I'd be like, well, like, I'm not tired, like, I'm not running fast, like, I'm not physically challenged, nothing's hurting, like, why would I take on a gel? Like, my performance is already optimized.
I'm at the peak. It can't get any better than this.
But I mean, it wasn't like quite that narcissistic, but I think like I kind of just thought of it as like something that would like help you maintain, but it wasn't necessarily enhancing, is probably more a better way to put it, or maybe just frames me less egotistical. But I think like now I see it more as like the better runners learn to consume more. So you just like, it's like a really cool and exciting thing to do, is just like learn to consume more so that you can improve your running, because like every opportunity you have to improve your running as a runner is just a good thing. And it doesn't mean that you're trying to win races. It just means that you're improving yourself, which is a really good feeling. And even if you're not competitive necessarily, I think it's still a good thing to work on. So
yeah, definitely. It's almost like this untapped potential that we may as well take advantage of. You know, it seems kind of silly if we could just eat more rather than work a bit harder. Surely we're, you know, it's like an easy win. You know, it's just taking something on board rather than having to do any extra effort or anything like that. And I do think too, it is a bit of a skill as well. It is something that you can practice and get better, and your digestive system will adapt and be more comfortable once your body is more used to that. So just really getting in those reps and doing that regularly and practicing and gradually building on and trying to squeeze in a little bit more if your body can handle it.
I think just something on that as well, like if you have absolutely no idea where to start, we have got several episodes with dietitians and nutritionists that give heaps of detailed information. So Chapo was incredible. In fact, we might just put them all in the show notes, because I can't remember what the names or the numbers of the episode, but Chapo, Tyson the trainer, Mac nutritionist, and Aiden the dietitian, Maddie Parsons. Yeah, I think we've got at least 5 episodes on food. So definitely check those out. But I think if you've just like never started anywhere, if you've never done it before, I would just think about really simply how long you're running for. Because I think often people ask questions like, how many do you need for a marathon? How many do you need for a 50K? But I would think more about how long are you running for? And then literally the things that you buy have on the background, like 1 to 2 every 45 minutes. So like just start on the lower end of what the packet recommends, like start really simple and remember it, like Soph said before.
Yeah, love it. All right, let's move along to training. What would we do with our training? What do we recommend you do? Now, obviously, we're kind of just giving an overall view or perspective or our opinion on how we think you could go about things in terms of principles. We're not actually giving you a training program, because everyone's doing a different distance. Everyone has different training history, injury history, all that kind of thing. But just more talking about how you might go about planning out your training and what sort of things you need to be thinking about.
Yeah. So I think firstly, you need to figure out what your commitment is, which is going to lead on really nicely from your why. So firstly, why are you running? Why do you want to do the ultra? I think having a really good doubt that is helpful, because then you're going to go, okay, I want to do it for whatever the reason is. And that's going to mean that I want to run 4 times a week or 5 times a week. And I think being really realistic about what you can do right from the start is so important, because I think we always think that we can fit in a little bit more, like, oh yeah, I'll run 7 times a week. And you probably have plenty of other commitments, probably have a full-time job and you've got family, friends, all sorts of things outside of that. So being clear about what your commitment is, like, is it running 5 times? Maybe you want to think about an hour. It's like, I'm happy to dedicate 2 hours on a Sunday, or I'm happy to dedicate 30 minutes every weekday. That would be my first step. What do you think about that, Soph?
Yep, I agree. And also, I mean, majority of people are really busy, but if you are not busy, then if you're looking at your schedule and going, oh, wow, like I've actually got time for 2 hours every day, don't just think because you've got the time, you should be doing that. I think you've also got to consider, what have you been doing previously? Are you going from completely no training? Are you someone who's already been running 5 times a week? Figuring out what your prior history and your current base is going to really set the tone for your next few weeks and few months of training. So just because you've got the time or you've got a certain schedule, that's obviously an easy way to break down when and how you're going to fit these things in, but making sure that that also fits your current ability as well.
And like, let's say you have got extra time and you're so committed to this goal, like you've just read David Goggins, you're like really inspired and motivated. Why don't you think, okay, I've got 3 hours a day that I'm going to dedicate to my running. 45 minutes of that is going to be a run. And then I'm going to do 10 minutes of mobility. I'm then going to do a half hour physio session, and then I'm going to see a coach, blah, blah, blah. Like there could be other things that you could be doing that's going to be helpful for your running. So it doesn't just have to be the run itself. Or there's other things like cross training. So I think cross training is something that's probably underutilized. As I mentioned at the start of this episode, like go and get on that elliptical, get on the rower, go for a walk. But like maintaining slash building a cardiovascular base is a huge part of training. and the really great ultra runners spend their lives building their cardiovascular base. So getting in a lot of that cardiovascular training can be beneficial. I know, Sophie said, you got to remember where you're coming from. So like if you've never done any exercise before, or like only done a small amount of cardio training, you don't need to go and flog yourself after you're on the elliptical. But like maybe you could do something that's like a nice leisurely way to gently nudge that cardiovascular fitness up without putting heaps of stress on your running muscles and tendons. So from like an injury perspective, going for a swim is going to be enhancing cardiovascular performance, but not working towards another injury.
Yeah, exactly. And just on that as well, if you are someone who is a little bit more prone to injury, or maybe you've got a couple of niggles at the moment, maybe there's some areas that you know that when you increase your training load or training volume, you start to notice things getting a little bit more achy. I think now if you're planning and doing an ultra, now's a really good time to get on top of those niggles early, because you're only going to be increasing your training. We know that training load is often associated with injury. So if we're increasing our training load, then we are probably at a slightly higher risk. So if there are things going on in the background, can we get on top of those first, or in those early weeks of training before our training load starts to increase? Because either they'll turn into a full injury, or we'll have to cut back our training, which when you're training for an ultra, doing the training is kind of vital for that.
Yeah, definitely. Because as well, often before you start, you're often in a not necessarily deloaded state, but you haven't like really loaded your body up. So maybe you've got a little niggle and you're like, oh, it's not that bad, I'll see how I go. Like the way runners get injured is simply overload. So you're just about to load up an injury, and like it will get worse. Like it's not just going to disappear. So yeah, go sort it out, because there's certain injuries, or there's a lot of injuries that if you go and get some treatment early, you can actually nip it in the bud in a couple of weeks, and then you're done and dusted. And then like maybe you're going to be sprinkling in some specific things into your S&C, or some like pre-running rituals that you might do as like a bit of maintenance or whatever, but do the hard work early and then get that out of the way so you can then get onto your training. Because like if you let things continue, like these injuries can become chronic and become harder to manage and all that stuff, which we just don't want.
Yeah, for sure. And you're going to have more time early as well, because your long runs aren't going to be 6 hours in the first week of training. So doing those extra things while you've got the capacity to do so in terms of time before later on when training is taking over a little bit more of your time would be a great idea. The other thing I think would be really important to consider, and I think is something different to when you're maybe doing a road marathon or a half marathon or a fun run, is really looking at the specifics around the elevation or the terrain that you'll be running on for the ultra marathon. So most ultra marathons are in the trail of some kind. There are a few road ones, but often they're in the bush. So with that comes a lot of different specifics around how you're going to best prepare for that. If you were to prepare for Sydney Marathon versus UTA 50K, it's going to look totally different, and making sure that you're aware of what you're getting into and how to best prepare for that. So including some stair practice, including some hill reps, including doing some long runs over hills rather than maybe avoiding the hills, which you might have done for a flat road run.
Oh, it's so important, isn't it? Because I think often, and this is something that I would have made the mistake of when I first started trail running, and I know you like were actually quite helpful for me going into my first trail run, or like not first trail run, I think I've run in the bush since I was a kid, but like something that was considered a trail run, like UTA. I was like, okay, there's road running and there's trail running, and like they're just like one's road and one's trail, and how you prepare for a trail is like all the same, and then road is all the same. But it's just so not true. Like as Soph just said, every trail is so different. And being specific on that, not just elevation, like definitely checking elevation is important, but is that technical elevation that's going to take a really long time? Like are there slippery corners? Are there awkward turns? Are there like things you have to scramble up? Or is it just like really hilly and like you just have to grind? Because that's going to totally change how you train. And like, yes, cardiovascular conditioning, like getting that really good base is going to be important regardless, but specific parts of trails I think is really, really important to practice, especially if you haven't got heaps of practice in general running on a trail.
Yeah, for sure. And I think like trail running is a skill as well. It is something that you can improve on. And even just obviously we know that running uphill is quite hard work. That can be quite taxing. You might have to hike or walk up the hills, but considering what you're going to do on the downhills, I know for Lydia and myself, our mentality around running downhills, specifically when they're technical, is slightly different. I'm keen to just go down and see what happens. Lydia was a little bit more tentative, particularly when we started training for UTA initially, because it's scary. Like if, you know, you could fall over, you could hurt yourself. there's rocks, there's loose gravel, there's sticks, there's all sorts of hazards when you're going down. And generally your pace is a little bit quicker when you're going down than when you're going up. So actually getting into the trail and practicing the skill of running downhill and making sure that you're confident doing that so that you don't get halfway through the race and have a bit of a panic or really need to slow your pace down on those moments where you could potentially gain a little bit more time.
Yeah, it's so important because you end up like wasting an opportunity to have some really easy kilometers. And I know I definitely had so many training runs like that. And yeah, so if our runs are so different, like I would just so much prefer the uphills because like it's just running. Whereas like downhill and like anything technical, you just disappear and I'd be like, oh, there goes Soph, she's gone. Because you just fly, but you just have so much more confidence on it. And I noticed myself, I would say that my sweet spot is running in the bush like 2 to 3 times a week. I find once I'm doing consistent trails, I get so much more comfortable, get more confident. And I've definitely seen a huge difference in my capacity and skill, just like going downhill, just a lot easier and faster. And you end up not wasting energy braking, because if you're slowing yourself up because you're cautious about tripping, you're just wasting energy. You're like braking yourself. So it's just silly and wasteful. So practicing on that is really essential.
For sure. And I think another thing to practice, which I don't think I considered at all doing any of the ultras, particularly probably Bondi to Manly, it would have been most relevant, is actually practicing hiking. And I know you're very into your walking, but I definitely have not taken up the same enthusiasm. But I think when you're doing something that is going to involve a lot of hills, a lot of elevation, maybe at the longest distance you've ever run, there probably are going to be moments when you're walking, maybe not for the elites, maybe not for the winners, but I think even in a lot of those events, they are still walking because some of it is just not runnable. So maybe spending a bit of time practicing that. And I think as well, if you're looking at your overall training load, if we can go out and do some walks or some hikes on some hills and stairs and practice that, it'll be a slightly lower intensity. So it's going to be helpful for your overall training load because you're not going out there and completely smashing yourself, but you're really practicing some specific skills and you use your muscles differently when you're walking and hiking. And I think it's a really important thing to get your head around and practice so that when you're out there, you're not struggling so much on the part that could potentially be a little bit easier.
Yeah, definitely. It's like such an easy way to add in more training volume that's like not as intense but hugely beneficial. Like you just practice being out on your legs for a long time. I think that's so valuable, really valuable. And it's my current favorite activity at the moment. So I'm going to be very good at hiking when I'm back to ultra running. Just you wait.
Yes. Now we've mentioned quite a lot throughout this section about overall training load, training volume, fitting everything in. Something else that's important to consider is the deload or the recovery weeks, the rest weeks, the down weeks, making sure you've got some time throughout your program, whether it's 12, 16 weeks, maybe it's 6 months worth of training, really planning out some time where you are going to deload the body a little bit, do a little bit less. Maybe you've got a whole week where you're not running. Maybe you've got just less volume throughout the week. Maybe you're taking out some intensity throughout the week, making sure that you are periodizing your training. So you're building for a couple of weeks, deloading and kind of repeating that process to allow your body to recover, adapt, and therefore perform well.
Yeah. And again, that's something that I think I've previously not done that well. And I think it is just like every other part of training, it's practicing and getting comfortable with it. Because I would say most runners find deloading and tapering challenging physically and mentally. I'd probably say more mentally, but then the mental, I think, has a huge physical sort of repercussion. And I think it's fair enough. Like it's uncomfortable. You've just been training really hard and now you're like backing off your training. And I often hear runners quite cautious and unsure about how early to take it. And like, oh, I don't want it too soon. Like I still need to get another run in. I still need to get a long run in, like just a few more harder sessions. But you're not really gaining much those last couple of weeks. You're just wanting to maintain fitness and start freshening up. Like it's so important to freshen up. It's scientifically proven to enhance your performance by a dramatic amount. So you've just got to do it. It's so important. And we've got a whole episode all about tapering that came out last week, which Sophie Lane was speaking on. So really have a look at that and learn.
Yeah, exactly. The final thing that I'd like to speak about for training, unless you've got any other thoughts, is getting a nice little team in your corner, whether that's some training partners, a running group, a run club that you want to train with, getting some people around. You're going to be spending a lot of hours, a lot of time on your feet. And I think it can be really, really enjoyable to have people to spend those hours with. And when you're thinking about your team as well, I'd also be thinking about Who's your physio? Who's your go-to person? If you've got any niggles or worries with injuries or pain, who can you go to that knows you well, knows what you're going through? Maybe they're a runner themselves, or they specialize in treating runners, getting them in your corner, and also seeking out some help from a coach so that you can take the guesswork out of it. You've got the accountability, you know exactly what to do, and you've got a little bit of a soundboard to bounce ideas and thoughts off, because there's a lot of unknown. You're kind of just thrown in the deep end doing this crazy thing that you might not have ever done before. It's nice to have a little bit of advice from someone who has been there themselves.
Well, Facebook groups as well. I know when we were training for UTA, Toga Trotters Facebook group was really helpful. Like, a lot of people would post just like random bits and pieces of advice. And like when I was living up in Coffs Harbour, we had a Coffs Trail page, and there'd just be like bits and pieces of just helpful stuff that people would post, or you'd like post a random question. And runners are so friendly. Runners love helping runners. Runners love sharing their advice and their things that have been helpful for them. And even if it's things like recommendations of socks or watches and just like random bits and pieces, there's always questions that come up. Definitely take opportunity of the virtual space, WhatsApp groups, and there's plenty around Sydney. And obviously the Stronger Stride Facebook community is a good one as well. One more thing outside of that, with regard to training, this is probably the biggest question that I would say comes up before an ultra, is how long should my longest run be before the big day? I heard this question actually came up on a WhatsApp group just the other day, and they were talking about within relation to a 100K event, and they were saying, I've just done Sydney Marathon. I am comfortable, like, our last long run for that was 35Ks. Like, does that mean I should be doing like an 80K long run? So tell me, Sophie, what are your thoughts on that?
Oh gosh, this needs a whole episode for itself. It's a bit of a rabbit hole, and it's very individual. And as always, it depends. I think what we need to consider is when you're training for a 10K or a half marathon or that kind of distance, it's super normal and super common and probably advised to be running the race distance if you're comfortable with that in the lead up. And I think that's totally normal. As the distances get longer, that's less important and probably riskier. And you might find that the risk outweighs the reward, and what you're actually getting out of that super long training run. Is it actually going to help you, or is it going to hinder potential performance? Is it going to put you at risk of injury? So I think considering, again, what you're starting from, have you done these distances before? And what can you actually recover from, and how much time do you have? If you've got a 12-week block and you're training for a 100K race, the time that it's going to take you to recover from that 80K training run and the tapering you'll need before it, and then the deload after, it's going to take out 2, 3, 4 weeks of your training and really not allow you to get a full volume and a full training block done. So I think taking the distance out of it, I would start looking at time. So how long is this 100K going to take you? Is it going to take you 10 hours? Is it going to take you 20 hours? That's going to really start to play into how your training will look, and specifically your long run. We don't need to run the whole thing. There's some research that suggests that around 3 hours is where we get most of our physiological changes, our adaptations, our gains. Obviously, beyond the 3 hours, we start to get things like our psychology plays into it, our mental state. Can we cope with pushing through past that 3 hour mark beyond? And we also get to practice with our gear, making sure we're not getting blisters and chafing. And we can use our nutrition and hydration and practice that. But beyond that, there's kind of this gray area of, you know, how far could you go? How much can you recover from? How far do you actually need to go? And I think for 100K, it's going to really depend. And I would base that on your previous long run. Are you comfortable doing a 30, 40K run? Maybe you could do a 50 or a 60, but I really wouldn't be pushing much past, you know, a 5 or 6 hour run. What I would do instead, if you are someone who's wanting to get in a lot of training volume and you've got the capacity to do so, is maybe doing a back-to-back Saturday and Sunday long run. Maybe do a 5 or 6 hour run on the Saturday and then a 3 or 4 hour on the Sunday, and see if you can back it up and recover from that. And you're still getting a really nice total training load in over those 2 days, but you're not putting yourself back for a long time. What do you think?
Oh, I think I second literally everything you said. Like, how much are you really getting? But why, Sophie? Like, tell me why. I think exactly as you said, like, there's only so much that you can get from a run. And obviously the research talks about that 3 hour mark being that golden amount. I do think that mentally, though, the gains of knowing that you've done something is huge. And then sometimes I think you kind of just have to do something so that you can mentally be at ease. And that's going to be different for everyone. And I would say that usually that is when you've done your first ultra, you have this huge mental ease around oh, like I can run 60Ks, I can run 80Ks or whatever it is that you've done. So I think that is almost, I would almost argue it's more important and better than, like, that's almost going to better equip you to running an ultra than all the training that you can do. In saying that, to run it well and to feel good and recover well and all those things is going to be totally different. But the mental part of just being like, oh, I can do this, like, I know I've done it because I've run 45Ks or run 48Ks. There's something that is so huge about that. Because once you go into an event knowing that you can do it, then you can. But obviously, if we're just thinking about general training principles about performance and all that stuff, and if you can sort of disregard, if you can disregard that itch that's like, oh, I'd like do another long run, I think you'd actually probably do better, as long as mentally you actually have put it to the side and you've accepted that and you're really calm and trust the process, then I think it's really not worth it. But if you're going to be in your head stressing, then whatever, go do that run. Just make sure you do it a long way from, and when I say go do that run, I'm saying, like, let's say you're training for a 50K, like, whatever, go do a 40K, but please do it, like, at least a month before the event so you can really recover from it. Because you're not going to recover in time. Like, you just, you're probably not going to recover. Like, that's just the reality. And you've just done all this training, you're probably going to end up with an injury. So it's kind of silly. In saying that, I also think sometimes we learn best from just doing silly stuff and figuring it out. have the suffering, the struggle. That's what I'm doing now, learning.
So much learning. Yeah, no, I agree. I think, yeah, there is something to be gained from that. But being sensible, because you've signed up for an event for a reason. You want to do this event. You know why you want to do it. And if you're going to just not be able to do that because of a training error, then is it really worth it? And I think something else to remember is you're never going to feel like you've done enough. I don't think anyone ever feels completely satisfied. I don't know if you ever get to a race and go, yep, I've done everything I can do. I've done all the training runs I could have done. I've done as many kilometers as I could have done. I'm in perfect condition. Like, you're always going to be wanting more. You're always going to think, oh, I should have done one more run or one more hill session, or should have got a different pair of shoes. There's always doubts that are going to come through anyway. So you'll probably never feel completely satisfied regardless of how long that last training run is. So yeah, just keep that in mind.
But then that's where you got to just trust the process. I feel like that's where the mental part comes in. I know it's oversaid, trust the process, blah, 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 but that's where having a coach, having a physio, having like a running group that you train with can allow you to just like settle in and be like, yeah, like I've done the things. Because there's something that's really nice about going into an event, knowing that you've kind of done all the stuff. Like, I remember going into UTA 50, I didn't train for it how I'd like to train because I was coming off the back of an injury. So I did a lot of double days where I did like two moderately long runs. And I think my last long run was 30Ks. Or 30, 32, 33Ks before the 50. Oh, now I'm like, maybe it was 35. Maybe it was 35. But it wasn't, it definitely wasn't any more than that. And I felt very, like, I hadn't run as far as I'd like to. But at the same time, I was so proud of myself, my training, because I really trusted what I did. And I was very clear about how I trained because I was managing coming back from an ITB niggle. So I couldn't train the sort of stair volume that I wanted to do, and I couldn't do the really excessive long run. So I figured out what was realistic, what I could do, and I really trusted what I did. I was really stoked. So when I got to the start line, I genuinely was like, I feel like I've done everything that I wanted to do and that I could do. Because, you know, I said like, oh, you'll always feel like you've got down, but I really genuinely didn't. Like, I genuinely was so happy with everything I'd done, and so I felt like I'd won it before I'd even started. I was like, yeah, this is like a success. Whereas going into Washpool this year, Washpool 50K, I got to the start line kind of laughing because I was like, this is so stupid. Like, I haven't run more than 22Ks in 2 years. In 2 years. And I tore my hamstring 5 weeks ago. Like, I was like, this is just ridiculous. Like, what am I doing? But like, let's just see what happens. But obviously, like, so different because there was just, I just didn't care. I was like, we'll just see what happens. Like, whatever happens, happens. It'll be an adventure nonetheless, you know?
Yep. All right. Shall we move on to gear? I think this is a fun topic. And I think, obviously, as always, it depends. But I think there's a few key things to consider when thinking about what gear you should be purchasing. My number one thing when you're getting anything or buying something or trying it out is considering chafing and blisters and the comfort of the material and where it sits on your body and how it fits you. And I guess how susceptible you are to blisters and chafing as well. So the tricky thing with this is you probably won't know until you try, but just making sure that what you're buying is maybe seamless or seam free, or it's designed for runners, or it's moisture wicking, or any of those things, rather than just kind of your standard cotton sock or cotton shirt or whatever it is. But making sure whatever you have, try it before race day and make sure you're using it on those longer runs, because often you could have a pair of shorts or socks or shoes or whatever that are fine for your normal 10K, 15K training runs. But then beyond that, things start to get a little bit uncomfortable and it just makes the experience less enjoyable. It's not going to make or break the day, but it's just annoying, enjoyable.
I reckon it can. Really, really bad chafing can be make or break. Personally, I haven't had it completely break. But I would say, like, imagine. I have memory as a kid of getting some really bad chafing and being like, yeah, it is not good. Like, really bad chafing. I feel like you're not as chafy, Soph, but I'm a chafy girl.
And, I'm more a blister girl myself.
Yeah, well, that's it. I'm not a blister girl. Blisters to me, I think I was talking about this before. Like, I just cannot understand. I cannot imagine, how a blister could ever hold you back, ever. I'm like, give me all the blisters, it's fine.
Have you had a bad one?
Not in a bad spot? Yeah.
I reckon it's worse than chafing.
Oh, no.
Because you can't do it. You can't change anything. Chafing, you can, like, if it's on your arms, you just move your arms differently. If it's on your legs, just land a bit wider. If it's a blister on your foot, like, you can't do anything about that.
But it's kind of the same thing, right? Chafing and blistering. Like, they're just friction and moisture. So, like, they happen at the same spots, chafing and blisters, right?
Except, so they both suck. They're both not great.
Like, a blister is just an extension of a chafe.
This none of this matters. Let's cancel this.
But I think chafing is way worse than blisters. Personally,
it's not competition between the two. They're both not great.
But you said it's not make or break, and I think it can be pretty close to break.
Okay. Well, either way, get it sorted. So get some Body Glide, just Body Glide, I'd recommend.
I'd say Body Glide is the best when it comes to...
Get some good socks, some toe socks potentially if you get blisters between the toes, or just some nice moisture-wicking comfy socks. Make sure your shoes fit you properly. Make sure they're big enough, wide enough, long enough. You want at least a thumb's width between the end of your longest toe and the shoe, and making sure that they're not too wide, not too narrow as well.
Definitely not too narrow. And I'd recommend going to a shoe shop that specialises in running. So, like, the runner shop or Pace Athletic in Sydney or wherever you live, try and go somewhere where there's people who run in the shop and it can actually help you.
Sorry. I'm just imagining when you said people that run in the shop, just people doing laps up and down Westfield. You look like you could help me.
Or, you know what? Bring a friend who runs with you.
Oh, yeah. It's my favorite type of shopping. Goodness. If anyone wants a shoe shopping buddy, call me up.
Oh, my goodness.
We could be personal shoppers, but just for running shoes.
I could do this. If anyone's interested in a shoe assistance, is that what it's called? I will help. I think that would be so fun. I'd love to come and help people get shoes. I mean, obviously, we used to work at a shoe shop, run a shoe shop, if anyone doesn't know, and it's so fun. Anyway, that's enough. But yeah, try shoes on with someone who knows about running, because it's so different. Like, if you just go to whatever the shoe shop is with people who don't run, they're just like, oh yeah, like, that looks good. Like, I think once I went to Revel, and nothing against Revel, like, I've had some amazing experience at Revel, but once went there, and, like, it was just not a running person that was there. She was not running around the shop. She was walking around
the shop. She wasn't sweating.
And, like, you look so slow. Like, you're not really moving fast. And I could just, like, she just didn't know anything about the shoes and didn't know anything about running. And it was just not it wasn't helpful. I didn't really learn anything.
Yeah.
But if you go somewhere that people know, and they're going to tell you all the good things. And it's going to be so fun.
And also, on that note, I would recommend, if it's within your financial goals and your budget, getting multiple shoes. So especially when you're training for an ultra, you're going to be doing a lot of kilometers. You might do some on the road. You might do some on the trail. Even if you're not, rotating shoes is scientifically proven to be helpful in the mitigation of injury. So definitely worth getting two different models, different brands, whatever. Just mix it up so that you've got some variety amongst your shoe selection.
Yeah. Very good. And we have an episode all about how shoe rotation can reduce your risk of injury. Check it out. We'll put the link below.
There's so many links. These listeners will be busy.
I know. Hopefully we can remember all the ones to put down. Okay, what else? Gear. Oh, your pack. That was so hard. I remember when we were deciding what pack to get before our first ultra.
Yeah.
That was the hardest decision because there are so many packs and it is very overwhelming. So I agree and understand and empathize with everyone who hasn't got a pack yet. Like, there is a lot to choose from. Again, you've got to go in and try some on, or talk to your friends who have got packs and try some of theirs on. Although they probably will be sweaty and gross, because I'm going to say most runners probably don't wash their packs as much as they should.
You know
or
what?
At all.
Since my zipper got stuck ages ago,
you wash it?
I wash it every time it's used now. Good. And it just goes in the wash with the clothes that I wore, because it gets kind of sweaty.
Oh my gosh,
it just sort of makes sense to wash it every time. I don't know why. It just was never a thing to wash every single time, but now it's just the routine. So if you're not on that routine, get on it. Your zippers don't get stuck and it's fresh and it's not disgusting. On that as well, trying the pack and putting some stuff in it. I've just got very strong memories of us with discus in our packs jumping around the shop. But like putting some weight in it, because it changes where the straps are distributed. It depends, changes how tight you have to have it, changes the fit. So making sure you just bring a couple of things with you. You know, with a lot of these races, there's mandatory gear. You might need a jacket and a buff and a beanie. And that's the same thing. Pack it up, fill it in. Just make sure it feels comfortable, not just when it's empty, because it's a totally different experience when
it's
full.
And also get a proper running vest. Like, I know that there's some like walking camel pack sort of things. I'm
Oh,
not
no.
talking specifically about the brand camel pack, but I mean that kind of style. And you can get them from like Kmart or I don't know where.
Kathmandu.
And like, yeah, like ones that are for like hikers, and they're probably great for hikers, but the running ones are actually really different and they are expensive, but I'd say they're expensive because they're actually really good. Like, they're made of quite lightweight, thin fabrics, and they're probably not going to be as like sturdy and durable as if you were to get some kind of like, what's the word? Like mid or sorry, lightweight sort of backpacky thing, but because they are like a thinner fabric, but the idea is that they really hug and squeeze and like conform to your body so they don't move around, and that is so important. They always are like, at least the ones that we've got Salomon Advanced Skin 12 is what we both have. And they are really great. They've got a tiny little bag in it to put rubbish if you find rubbish on the trail. They've got a little whistle, which is really important, and they've got so many straps everywhere. And even though I said they're probably a little bit more delicate and maybe not as robust as like a standard conventional hiking pack, gosh, that thing has been through a lot, and it's
yeah. I was
like
just thinking, we've had ours since UTA. Yeah, I think it looks exactly the same. Like, you know, often shoes wear out, and they get holes in them, or the soles wear out. I feel like the pack has just been through the ringer, and they're doing well. So definitely worth the investment. Definitely don't cut corners on that if you can.
Yeah, we'll say the straps, like the elastic parts, I need to replace them, but you just buy a replacement strap, like
Yeah. I know what you're saying.
Elasticy. Yeah. So I think you can just buy them, which is probably another point. Like, if you can buy a brand that have got like replacement bits and pieces, that's really handy as well.
Yes. Better for the planet.
Salomon, if you want to sponsor us, let us know.
Yeah, please. We won't say no. Just on that as well, filling up your pack, thinking about mandatory gear, making sure that you're checking the list of things that you need and making sure you're actually reading the specifications. For a lot of these events, you'll need a waterproof jacket. And it has to be seam sealed, or it might have to be a specific type of jacket, making sure you're actually getting the right one. And potentially with something like that, you could just borrow it from a friend if you might not actually need it, but you just need to tick the box, making sure you're actually getting the right thing. Similar with high-vis vests, often they've got to be a specific number. So there's no point going to all this trouble of buying all this stuff and then turning up to the race day and then it not even qualifying you. And then I don't know what happens, you get disqualified or you get a time penalty or whatever. Just make sure you get the right things. I think that's something that can be easily overlooked.
Yeah, that's really important. I remember scrambling like the day before UTA at Anaconda, asking to see if they had a high-vis vest. And like one of the like workers just had one out the back in the warehouse.
Oh.
And they just gave me their random, like one of the ones that they wear at work. They're like, oh, no one's using this. Do you want to just borrow that? And I was like, oh, yeah, sure. Thank you. I'll bring it back. Because I didn't know where to buy one. I mean, I'm sure I could have. They don't know where to buy them. I mean, sure you can buy them from lots of places.
Bunnings, but I think, is the place.
Okay, well, I was living in Coffs Harbour. Like, we didn't have all
the
things.
Have a Bunnings?
Well, yeah, we did.
Anyway.
But anyway, not important.
Doesn't matter. One other thing on gear as well is sun protection, because it's going to be different now. If you're someone who normally just goes out for a little half an hour jog at sunrise versus going for a 4 or 5 hour run throughout the middle of the day on a Sunday, you're going to need some sun protection, a hat, some sunnies, some sunscreen. We would recommend Scorcher for your face sunscreen needs. We've got a link below if you'd like a little sneaky discount, because you're just going to be in the sun so much longer than you would typically be for a shorter run. So I would highly, highly recommend getting that on your face, making sure you're not getting burnt. I'm pretty sure I still have some trauma tan lines from the Bondi to Manly 80K where I didn't obviously put enough sunscreen on. I did reapply it and I did put a lot on my face, but less so on my arm. So making sure that that is something that you consider when doing your first ultra. All right. I think we will wrap things up on gear just there. We are going for a while, but we are getting through it. We're nearly at the end.
Nearly halfway.
You're struggling. Just hold on a little bit longer.
In your ultra running. Yes, you're hanging in there.
Good mental training. Yeah, really commit. Don't give up yet. Remember your why. Why are you listening to this? Because you really want to support us. Thanks. Okay, logistics. What do we need to think about in terms of race day, preparation, getting to the event, what's going to happen on the day, all those kind of things?
I'm going to put my hand up and say, this is something I'm actually good at. A lot of things I'm not good at, I'm good at this.
Hey.
No.
Hey, give yourself some credit. Okay. You're good at more than one thing.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Thank
at least two things.
I was just going to say, this is something you, Soph, I know you've done well in some aspects, but...
in general? What are we talking about?
But you are so relaxed about these things.
Yeah,
like, so, so relaxed that it gets me more, like, stressed about needing to get stuff done. So I know in the bus I've overcompensated for your...
with the yin and the yang.
Chill. Yeah, we are the yin and the yang. Yeah. But so many events that we've been doing together... And you're like, oh, yeah, like, we'll leave at this time. And I'm like, no, like, we'll leave in, like, 2 hours before that time. Like, what are you talking about? Like, I like to be very early to things, have, like, all that stuff organized, so far in advance, like, all those logistic things. And I would say that's probably because my dad is like that. And I've been drilled into it right from a youth. And so now I wouldn't say I'm an organized person, but... anything about logistics on the day, like, yes. I want to know, like, the bus timetable. I want to know where my car spot is. I want to, like, just that has to be, like, so organized, because on the day you've got to be really getting into the flow state. You can't have any logistics stuff in your mind at all. You got to have your 4 pairs of spare socks, your 4 pairs of spare shoes, like, your contingency Uber already ordered and pre-booked, like, all that stuff is planned.
Yes, just on that, I have a little anecdote for you. This was not an ultra, but this was a half marathon in Melbourne.
Prime example.
Yeah, I know. Just really trying to make sure the audience understand where we're coming from and that the fact that you are correct. We were at Melbourne. Lydia was doing the 10K. She was going to get a PB. I was doing the half. Also going to get a PB. Having a great time.
We both did in the end, right?
We did, even though you were terribly sick, but yeah. We both did. So look, this is just a case. If you are a little bit less prepared, sometimes it's okay. So we were there, Lydia's run, I thought, was like an hour before mine. We were hanging out, she was warming up, getting ready. I was getting some content, watching the 10K start, hanging out. And then I just went for a bit of a wander because I had like an hour to kill. I was just hanging out, had all the bags. I was waiting to meet Zach. He was going to take the bags from me. We had plenty of time. I wandered over like maybe a kilometer away from the start line, just checking out all the sights. And then
of Melbourne. You're like, I might catch a tram.
Yeah, do a few laps. The free lap around the city is great. And then I can't remember why, but I checked the time. I don't know, just to clarify whether it was 8 or 8:15 or whatever it was. And it turns out it was 7, or, you know, that's my hypothetical situation. Basically, it was an hour before I thought it was going to be. And it was literally as I was checking it, it was starting. And I was so far away. And I also had all of Lydia's and my bags in my hands and nowhere to put them.
With my 4 pairs of spare shoes and socks.
Yeah, all of her contingency plans stuff. I had in my hands. I needed to run. So I dumped them in a bush, told Zach where they were, hoping he'd find the bush, and then ran to the start line. It was at least a kilometer away. Got to the start line.
It was a good warm-up.
It was a great warm-up. Very stressful. It was much more than the casual jog that I would have liked. Got to the start. everyone had started. I was at the back and I crossed the line. And you know how they're like, here come all the latecomers. Like, that was me. Don't want to be that person ever again. That was not fun. But it ended up being great because I then felt like I was killing it because I was overtaking so many people because I started right at the back and I was weaving through. Like, it's a bit annoying because there's a lot of people to get through. But it was ended up being a really fantastic race. But I would not like to do that again, and I would like to be more prepared. And I do often get to the morning of and go, oh, I'll just check. Well, actually, where's the start line? Oh, actually, what time is it? So I definitely need to work on that. But whenever you're around, I just feel like you'll just sort it out. But that day, you just left me.
I was sorting out my own race.
Yeah.
So yes, get organized. Well, that's why we're a good team, I would say.
I agree.
Yes, flow state. You got to get into the flow state.
Get in the flow state. Some things to think about as well if you're doing an ultra that are different to a shorter run is thinking about, are you going to have support crew? Are you going to have pacers? Are there places that people can access you on the course to give you drinks and food and hugs or whatever you need? Or are there drop bag options? Can you leave a bag of stuff at the start line that will be taken to an aid station or to the finish line for the things you need? I would also consider what is going to be at the aid station. Normally you can find out what hydration, what nutrition, what's going to be there so that you can therefore plan your training around knowing what sort of stuff you might need to carry, what sort of stuff you might be able to access at the aid station. But as a rule of thumb, I probably wouldn't rely on the aid station in case they run out of what you're looking for or something changes.
I think it's really important. I would say if you have a support crew as well, being really clear about where they're meeting and making sure that they know how to get there and giving them all of those details. Like, this is the spot where you're meeting. I'm going to be here sometime between 11 and 1. I need you to get there at 11 exactly, or like 10 to 11. And this is where you park your car and this is the bag and like all those things. It sounds really bossy. But I also think, like, if someone wants to be your support crew, then like obviously you're not going to pick just a random. You're going to pick someone who genuinely wants to be there and support you. And like, they will probably be really excited to do that role. Just like they should be because they're a support crew, but they're going to want to do the role properly and not like on the morning and suddenly be like, oh shit, like, oh, where did they set a park? Like, did they mean this spot, that spot? Like, if you can like map it out so clearly for your support crew, then that just has less stress for them on the day and no doubts, no questions for them, no stress. And then they'll actually be there at the right time.
How did we go for that for Bondi to Manly? How do you rate my planning?
Well, again, it was actually very good, to be honest. It was actually really good. I was actually very impressed.
So it was a spreadsheet. I feel like that's something.
I'm sure
you probably created that or told me to do that or something. Well, and you know what? That spreadsheet got used again this year. I passed it on to someone and it was very much valued. So planning has gone on to spread more planning.
Well, I was actually thinking of that specifically when I was saying like having a plan. So that was really good.
Organizational example.
Yeah, well, I know
you've come a long way contrast. Since Melbourne.
But I do just remember about that as well, being like, is there anything else that you need or want? And you're like, no, like, it's all fine. Like, yeah, that'll work. Like, you're just so relaxed, which is good. I think it's nice to be relaxed. I think we're obviously just different people. But really? We're the same, but different. With the yin and the yang, right? But I think even more detail is good. And it's not that I wouldn't even say I'm a detail oriented person, but on the actual day, I think, you know what else, probably coming from doing dancing, like ballet background, like you're really detail oriented, like in all the rehearsals and like everything is so to a T, like building up to it. So that on the day you're just like performing and you're like doing the thing and fully relishing the moment and not thinking about all those little random bits and pieces. So you can like fully embrace the moment and also take it in and enjoy it. But I was thinking when you did do Bono Manly, there was that moment where you like ran past and you were like, I don't know, you called out something and you threw a water and I chased you for like a K to give you the water that was topped up because I wasn't quite sure what you wanted because it wasn't in the spreadsheet. But to be honest, I was just stoked because it meant I got to chase after you and then run with you.
That was a great moment in the end. I'm glad that it worked out that way. My poor communication led to a really fun time. And I also don't know why I was in such a rush. Like, I couldn't even stop for a second, but I just was like, I felt like I was on, like, I was a star of a movie and I was just like living, I was like that main character on the show and I just threw my bottle and we got good content and it all worked out fine. So
you were in the flow state.
I was. That was the peak. Yeah. It was early, very early on. It was all downhill after that.
I think for some reason I was looking at your data in miles and I was like, you're doing so well. You run 6K. And you're like, no. I can't remember what the translation would be. Like, but whatever it was not 6K.
Classic. Nice. Anything else about logistics?
Have a plan and just be also really comfortable that it will all work out in the end. And that's something that I've learned from Sophie Lane is that if things don't go to plan, you know what? It's all going to work out. Like, it just doesn't matter.
It makes a good story, if not.
It makes a good story, but also, like, stuff just doesn't, like, all those things that you're like, oh, I must have this, I must have that, a lot of the time actually just don't matter that much. And, like, you'll be late to your race and then you'll still get a PB. Like, it's just sometimes, like, it's only a big deal if you make it a big deal. And that's something that I probably, even though I've just gone on and on about being really meticulous about the detail of your plan, I also think, like, just relaxing and not caring, because, like, it's all going to be hard regardless. So just try not to sweat those small things.
Nice. All right. We are going to finish things up with a little bit of advice about what we would do or not do if we had our time again. If we could go back to 2019 or 20 or whatever it was, 21, when we did that run. I can't remember. What would you do differently?
Five years ago or something. But
yeah.
Maybe
so
not.
Long. No, not know. That long. Yeah, what'd you do differently?
Well, I would not take my gloves off specifically
so niche,
when it comes to UTA 50K, because so we did it in May, as you guys would know, and it was 2 degrees and sleeting, which means very cold. And I've got Raynaud's, which means that I lose circulation. I get very severe peripheral vasoconstriction and in my blood vessels and my fingers and my toes as well. And so it means that my fingers become very, very cold. And like cold, that's one thing, that's fine, but like I can't use my hands. And I like totally just messed myself up because it was going down this really steep staircase and like took my gloves off so that I could put my hands on the little handrails, because I'm like a little old lady going down the stairs and I was nervous and scared. And then after that, my hands got so cold, I couldn't put my gloves back on, which meant that I couldn't get any gels until like 35Ks. So, or water, like I literally couldn't even like get my thing to my mouth. But I did get some people to get the water at the aid station. I was like, can you like put this in my mouth?
Nice. But that's another thing too, just on that, with the hydration situation, with the bladder. Sometimes you can't get the stuff out. Was that you? Did that happen to you? Where you like, it wouldn't come out? Yeah, that's it.
So make sure
when you're preparing your hydration, the night before, the morning of, whatever, have a test. Make sure you can actually get some liquid out and it's actually connected. That happened to me the other day at Stromlo, but I checked it before I started. But just making sure you actually try and take a sip so that you know that it's actually functioning well is important.
That's so important. Not having your tube connected to the bladder is like a very important step.
Yes.
Both these two ultras that I've referenced, both of them I couldn't access my hydration until like the last 15Ks of the event. Theme. I didn't realize that was my theme.
Maybe it's your subconscious trying to be competitive and knowing really you don't tough. Need them.
I'm like, so yeah, I'm strong. So tough. Cool. One other of my things that I would not do again, or like would encourage to do more next time, is celebrate after. Because I think it's so good to celebrate your achievements and acknowledge what you've just worked really hard for, because not only is it the 6 hours that it took you, or 10 hours or 100 hours to do those.
I mean, you could do something for that long.
Depends on your training. Well, how long is that? Like
a month or something? 100 hours? No. If 48 hours is 2 days, it's about 4 days and a bit.
I'm joking.
I don't know with you sometimes.
Yeah, like however long it is, it's also the big block of training that you've just done. And I think it's so important to celebrate that. And that's something that I wish I did more of. It's the same to me as like you do your morning Sunday long run or long walk, if you mean you're doing a big Sunday 3-hour walk. You want to like celebrate that that achievement, like get your coffee and you chat with your friends and you're like, oh, that was such a nice walk that we just did, like beautiful 3 hours. And then the same for like an actual big event. You want to celebrate that you've just worked so hard for the last year, 2 years, however long it's been, and then you've done it. I think it's so nice to celebrate.
Nice. That's good.
Not so nice.
Sophie Lane disagrees. We discussed for far too long. I don't really care that much, but if you want to celebrate, you celebrate, and I'll be there. If you invite me, I'll show up, but I won't be planning it. So you know me, I'll just wing it.
Just wing it on the day. See, I like to plan what I'm going to be eating after, like where I'm going to be going out for dinner, like what the ambience is going to be like who's invited, the guest list, the reservation.
Oh, whoa.
You know, where we're going to have our little post-activity dip. Like all these things are very important. The coffee, like all that stuff. When I'm saying celebrate, I'm not saying like have a party, but like just like those little post-activity activities.
Nice. Good. I'm trying to think of what I would do differently. I feel like each of the ultras I've done I've approached slightly differently. Also, like none of them have gone that well. So I feel like I can't really give
you haven't celebrated advice. Enough.
That was the reason, yeah. Most of them I have either gotten an injury during, or well, no, not most of them. In UTA I hurt my knee halfway through. And then we did End Peak, which I was still kind of injured from that.
Oh,
and then,
you were so injured.
What did we do after that?
The backyard ultra. We got an ice cream and we went to the beach.
Oh yeah, but I mean long. Yeah. Anyway, Bondi to Manly, like it was long. I don't know, but I might be able to let you guys know after February when I do Tararua, because this prep's going well so far. We're only early days. But what I actually, on that note, what I would do differently is I'd get a coach, because I'm really, really enjoying the process of having a coach and just being told what to do, not have to think about it so much, not be like in my head about, oh, should I run then or should I run now or should I do a double? Should I do this many Ks? How should I do this? Like just following is just so nice. So that is probably what I would have done differently.
Yeah, I think that's really good. Yeah, get a coach.
Yeah.
I love it. Wow. Well, are we done? Thank you so much for all your information, Sophie Lane.
Oh, thank you for yours. It's been an absolute honor and a privilege, and it's great to have you on here because chatting to myself is not as fun as chatting to you.
Yeah, well, I'm back. I'm back in business, slow and steady. Hopefully for the rest of the time that we have.
The time. Oh, I don't want this to ever end. Just on a side note.
Life.
Well, life and this podcast, this exact episode. I don't want it to end. Let's just keep it going. I feel like I'm just getting warmed up. But no, I think we shall leave it there. Hopefully you guys can take away some valuable information amongst all the chaos and nonsense that was. We'll leave lots of different episodes that you can have a listen to. If there's anything that you want to dive a little bit deeper on, if you want to find out a little bit more information, we've got plenty of experts who can give you some more guidance around specific areas. And yeah, good luck with your first ultra. Let us know what you're training for. Let us know how it goes once it's done. We would love to hear about the journey. And if you need any advice around coaching or injuries or anything at all, please reach out to us. We would be more than happy to help.
Awesome. That's it. All right. Thanks, guys.